The History of Alternative Podcast. A historic look back at everything alternative.
The History of Alternative has seen its share of amazing duos. I mean, just off the top of my head, you've got the White Stripes, 21 Pilots, Black Keys, Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Daft Punk, MGMT, Outkast, Local H, The Rockers, The Hardy Boys, Demolition, and I've moved into wrestling. Sorry. Rewind. Let's go back and add Royal Blood to the conversation. This is the History of Alternative Podcast. I'm John Manley. That's local community theater enthusiast James Van Osdell.
You mock, but Chicago's storefront theater scene is amazing. And the podcast this week is sponsored by our friends at Wintrust. For locations and information, go to wintrust.com.
Wintrust! Go on, Wintrust. Come on, get it!
Formed just under 10 years ago, Mike and Ben have taken Royal Blood Sound to Universal arena-filling level. And by arena-filling, I mean like ear-splitting, bone-rattling, pushing your ass against the back of the wall, arena-filling volume. First question, Mike and Ben, hello. How do you two guys make so much noise?
With amplifiers and a full drum set.
Put a couple of mics on them, turn it up to 11.
That's it.
It's I was going to say, is it the Spinal Tap method? Our amps go to 11?
Yeah, all of our amps go to 11.
I love that. I love that. I think that's always like the thing is like, even... it transfers like digitally too. Like even when you listen to your songs on Spotify or the radio, they seem loud too. Did you guys like, was that a purposeful thing to be like, we want to be really big even though we're just two guys, or did it just kind of come out that way?
I think it comes out of the insecurity of being a two piece. Cause for us, the idea of only having the two of us in the band, the reason behind that was really based on just the chemistry and between us when we play. So then you're sort of handed the burden of, well, how are we going to sound loud enough? So you're forever chasing this sort of insecurity of like sounding big enough. And I think half of it is that, is the idea sort of like, overcompensating for that concern of not being loud enough. But then I think the other half of it really is that by nature, less has always been more. And when there's only two elements, particularly bass and drums, which are two of the most primal, I would say, instruments, when there's only those two things, it means that they can just be a lot fucking louder, you know? So I think as a result, you know, it ends up being bigger by default anyway. So put those two things together and suddenly you have like, well, a band that sounds like ours.
And given that big sound you make, do you have a lot of music nerds kind of crowding by the front of the stage, checking out your pedal arrangement, trying to see what exactly it is you're doing there instrumentally?
Yeah, sometimes. But kind of what I've just been saying though, that you know, that it's one pedal, it doesn't really solve the problem, you know. I think very early on we realized that, you know, like heavy or size in music comes from really it's the content really that's heavy, you know, it's the material. Like I learned that Tom Morello would write all of his riffs on his like beat up old Spanish acoustic for Rage Against the Machine. That's how the riff started.
Which is unbelievable, right? Like, how is that possible?
But it makes sense, because it was like, well, if they sound big on that, and if they sound heavy on that, then they are heavy, you know? So it's, it's making sure that the content is heavy, and then kind of expressing it and playing it in that style, then you're sort of doubling down, you know?
So being in a band with two people, how does decision making, what's that process like? Is it like a, you know, is it a White Stripes where, you know, one of you is Jack and it's your band and the other guy's in it? Or is it a Simon and Garfunkel you're fighting? Or is it like, how do you guys get to your decisions?
I'll give you a quick role play demonstration. Hey, Ben, I was thinking about this bit. Now, which one do you prefer, this one or this one?
I prefer the second one, Mike.
Okay, great. And what about you? What are you thinking for your part?
Well, I'm thinking I could just play this beat. What do you think about this beat?
I love that beat, and I'm really glad you said that. Let's go get some lunch. And it kind of like that until we have an album.
Yeah.
It's that easy.
Well, I think for us, there's more yeses than no's because...
We're awesome.
Because we're awesome. I mean, we're definitely a yes band with expressing what we can do.
Yeah.
Unless it's like absolutely terrible, it's like...
And the idea is always like our ideas are usually survival of the fittest. So we kind of remain open to everything. And if something is genuinely really good and has merit, then it hangs around for long enough.
Right.
So because this is a history of alternative podcasts, we're always interested in learning what ingredients made up the artists we're talking to. Mm-hmm. As you were coming up, like what were those albums you were chasing as kids? What were the things that or albums or artists that made you pick up an instrument in the first place?
It's for me, I my first instrument was piano, and I was brought up playing very boring songs about leaves falling down or a small boy chasing a dog, and that is all I knew of music. And then I discovered Queen and the Beatles and the Beach Boys. And I began to learn songs on piano like that. And then as a six-year-old, I was already creating an identity with music. And I was like, oh, this is me. Like when family members come around or when it's someone's birthday or it's Christmas, I can do this thing or I can get attention or I can play music. So that was my beginning. I was like, I already found a kind of what person I wanted to be. It was like an immediate identity for me.
How about you, Ben?
For me, it was listening to Chad Smith with the Chili Peppers. Probably Blood Sugar Sex Magik and Californication were two albums that I remember playing along to. Nirvana with Dave Grohl, obviously, and then... Queens of the Stone Age, Songs for the Deaf. And then the one that really got me, I think, apart from Songs for the Deaf, was probably Mars Volta.
Great call.
Where the drumming all of a sudden became insane and it became things that I couldn't do. Like it was beyond my ability, which then inspired me even more to what songs could do. And places that the drums could go, and yeah, it was manic.
Yeah, they're a difficult band. Like it's kind of like trying to like read Sanskrit or something. Like it takes a long time for you to kind of figure out all of the things that are happening with that band. But when you do, it really, you know, opens this door to this amazing catalog of really trippy music.
Yeah.
Music has kind of gone really digital these days, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, it gave us Tame Impala, but it's kind of seemingly left a hole, like a sonic hole in the black band t-shirt that is alternative music. I'm sure you guys are sick of the is rock and roll dead question. I'll rephrase it. Do you think organic music makes a comeback at some point?
So you cut out a little bit just asking the question. Do we think what, sir?
Organic music, like so much of everything is done now on computers and with keyboards, and it's amazing, it's great, but like two guys in a room with instruments just cranking it out, does that come back?
I think it has moved on, and I think the records that are so classic that rock and roll kind of admires as being classics, I think one thing that I remind myself of is that they were using the latest technology at the time. That was as far as technology could go. And they were trying to make it sound as use it to its, you know, and they were pushing the bound. Even then they were pushing the boundaries of what these like primitive machines could do. So yeah, I think if the Beatles had a laptop, they'd be like, oh my fucking God, you know, and then blow their fucking minds, you know? Because they were searching for those things. So I think it's about, but there's still, I think we still hold great respect to the way those records are made. because there's an ethos to them, which is that you don't rely on technology and you
rely on chemistry.
You rely on chemistry, yeah. And when you're a band, that is all you have going for you. That is the soul of the band. It's hearing the chemistry between however many players the band make up. So when the recording process is just different, you're capturing an energy.
Yeah.
You're capturing how those things bounce off each other. So we kind of enjoy a hybrid, really, of all of it, of the latest technology, but then also very, very basic. I mean, the fact that we still record real drums is a very old school and weird thing. Like, we've been rehearsing these new songs, and we have two brilliant backing singers that join us, and they were like, they're just amazed that we don't play to a click track and we don't play along to a laptop. They're like, you guys are weird. Oh yeah. Yeah. We're not, we refuse to be a karaoke band. We refuse to be like, hey, come and watch us like be crazy and weird, but exactly in time with a computer. So that seems so boring and weird to us, you know? So I think it's about, yeah, using all of it, but with some sort of taste.
Let's take a couple steps back and look at some Royal Blood history. Things happened really fast for your band. Right out of the gate, you put out the self-titled debut in 2014. Big tours, tons of attention. You went nonstop. Did any of that ever take its toll mentally or physically on you guys? Because it was a whirlwind for you. Still is, I guess.
It was just a lot of fun, you know. It was something that you only dream of being able to do, and its beginning was so innocent, and so we were really searching for no exterior validation, you know. It was only really for ourselves, and it was a very, even the way the songs were written and recorded was very private, and it was a very small world. So suddenly it was just very dramatic and very extreme. And then I think the effect that has on you, you don't really have any time to realize that until a long time has passed. Because we've spoken about this before, but it's when the acceleration is that extreme, it's a game of just keeping up with the pace that your life is suddenly moving at. And every day you're doing something for the first time, and the shows were just constantly getting a little bit bigger. So you're just, it's like you're treading water, and it's just like all you have to really do is stay afloat. And it isn't until you get to the end of, we got to the end of that first tour, where we were like, oh my God, I'm so fucked. I just need to sit down for a second, you know? And that's when you realize how far you've come. You only realize how far you come until you get a chance to look back.
And we didn't get to stop really after the first record. It was like, right, straight on to the next one. And the pressure of that and thinking of having to do all of that again was such a huge mountain to climb for us that we didn't get to kind of reflect on how far the band or our lives had changed.
And it's difficult to check in with yourself to make sure you're okay, because from the outside, everything is going so well, you know?
Right.
Who wouldn't have any concern about how you're doing, because it's like, well, those guys are having the time of their lives, so how would, you know? So it takes a sec to stop and look inward and be like, am I actually okay, because this is fucking crazy, you know?
Was there ever a moment when you weren't okay? Like, did you realize like this is getting a little heavy for me?
For this second album, for me, was when I began to drink a lot and party a lot as a way of like detaching from everything, you know. And that became, you know, ultimately became very destructive, you know. But like all kind of lessons in life, you have to learn them.
Right. Back to when you were recording your early stuff, your first stuff, was there a moment there where like you got to a place where you go like, oh man, I think this is going to be big. Like, I think we really have something here. Did you have a moment like that? Did you like kind of go, you know, I think someday we could head Glastonbury with this music. Like, do you, was there ever a point in time where you realized like, oh, we figured it out, so to speak, no pun intended.
There's sort of realizations in degrees of things, you know? There's always the, you know, you've made it when joke.
Right.
kept happening. And I think I would say the first one is perhaps when Out of the Black was on the radio for the first time. And hearing all the music that came before it, it was just like, and it just all blended into this one thing. And then suddenly Out of the Black came on, and it was like this huge sore thumb. And I remember coming to the speakers and thinking, oh, this sounds really, really good. But then there was other moments along the way where we played Glastonbury for the first time, and we hadn't played in front of more than 200 people a night. And suddenly there was like 12,000 people there, and they'd come to see us. And it was like, oh, wow, this is... So it just sort of, it snowballed, you know?
Sure. You guys both share playlists all the time on streaming services and whatnot. What are you guys into these days? Like, what's on repeat on your playlists? Not necessarily new, but like just in general. Like, I saw that, Ben, you had... Aviation from Last Shadow Puppets on your playlist, which is, I mean, one of my favorite songs ever. Like that build at the end, like with the violins, like ride me out. It's so good. I wish more artists did this. But what bands and songs are you guys into like right now?
I'm really into the Lemon Twigs new record.
Okay,
I think that's one thing that came out this year that I've really latched onto. Just because it's so different to most music that's come out and enjoyable to listen to, I think. What else is...
I've been... the two records for me that I've been, like, listening to, like, as an album rather than just sort of one at a time would be the new Strokes record, which is just, I think, is, like, maybe the best record they've ever made. And Harry Styles' last record... Mm. Where I was just like, both albums are like such a body of work, and they're such a, I like albums that feel like a place to go visit, you know, they feel like a kind of destination. And yeah, both those records for me, I was like, yeah, I just found myself listening to them all the fucking time.
When you guys make your albums, and we're going to get to the new album shortly, do you make them as albums? I mean, do you think about the sequencing and the work as a whole, or, I mean, cause that's kind of changing in the music industry these days. Like now it's kind of like, you know, cram your three best songs at the top so they get playlisted and, you know, all of that. And I kind of feel like there is this big hole where the concept of album is kind of getting lost. Do you guys write for the full product?
Yeah. I think it's funny, isn't it? Cause music's always been sort of designed around the format,
yeah,
and what it's going to be used for. And for us, vinyl is, you know, our fans really appreciate, and we're also aware that that's how a lot of our fans are going to listen to the record. So we take everything into consideration, even the time it takes to flip the record over and what songs are going to be on either side. And because why not? It's more fun to think about the details, you know, because there's people out there, you know, this could be their favorite record. So you should put everything into it and design it. But I think, we don't really, it doesn't feel like a body of work until we have a few kind of pins that link up that feel like, we've created a bit of a world. So at the beginning of the writing is kind of loose because we didn't really know where we were going to go. And then we had troubles coming and a few other things where we were like, oh, hang on a minute. I now see the circle. Like I kind of see where we're going with this.
Kind of like a set list. When you go and see a band, you don't want them to play all the singles at the beginning because you're going to be left with this time, you know. So it's those pins are in the set list, you know, finishing with a massive song here, starting with a, you know, they're things that it takes you on a journey, doesn't it? And I think albums should do that. So you shouldn't have those three really upbeat songs and then five mellower ones. You know, it needs to take you on a ride.
Sequencing is a lost art. Since going back to the history concept and some of the stuff you guys are into, we've all been stuck at home for the past, well, it seems like 10 years, but 7 or 8 months. And we've all been kind of finding ourselves digging back into the things we love, the sounds we love, the artists, the albums. What are those artists or albums for you that help get you through lockdown and dealing with life in the age of the pandemic? What are those, for lack of a better way of saying it, desert island discs for you?
I feel like I've mentioned two of mine already, the Harry Styles one and the Strokes one, because the Strokes, I remember, came out at the beginning of the UK lockdown. So that was something that was on loop. And there's this band Skaters, which my girlfriend was playing like.
Yes, yes.
And now I'm just like, why isn't this one of the biggest bands ever? They're so fucking good. The songs are so good.
I'll tell you offline why they're not, but yes, that their first album. Are you talking about the first record? Because their first record is like, 12 out of 10.
Wouldn't know. I haven't like it's because I haven't been playing them, but I've listened to them, and I'm like, these guys are amazing.
I think for us though, we've been so, our heads have been so in the space of making our own record great, and we've had this time over lockdown to really focus in on our own music that sometimes. You don't really want to listen to any other music because it's just a bit of an overload and you've been listening to things all day and trying to create things. And I think for this lockdown period, you know, these past months, we've been really focused on this new sound and this new era of Royal Blood that it's kind of hard to listen to anything else really.
Which leads perfectly into the question I was just about to ask. We have a new record coming from you guys shortly. We are all very much in love with Trouble's Coming here in Chicago, and we're excited to learn about what's on the way from you guys. Judging from the lead single, I guess the word would be dancier or funkier a little bit. It seems like you guys are kind of opening up your sound a little bit. Is that accurate? Is there going to be more of that?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, it feels like for the first time we've become a rhythm section.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way to put it.
And I guess our experience making records has accumulated over the years, and suddenly we found this. It felt like a brand new way of playing, and on paper, it's actually just a very subtle reinvention. I think we feel like Figure It Out is almost like the embryo to this whole new record, you know? It's stuff we've been doing before, but it's been perhaps censored in a way we haven't gone full hog with the kind of some of the sounds. The journey we went on writing it was working out how to do that and where to go. And Trouble's Coming was the kind of eureka moment where it felt so us. It felt like we're not trying to be something we're not. This is actually who we already are. It was just a different twist on it. It was like going through your wardrobe and finding like an old shiny jacket and then realizing if you paired it with the same old jeans you've been wearing for years, and that you have this brand new look, but you didn't have to buy any new clothes.
So before we cut you loose, and thank you for doing this, Mike and Ben, tell us what you like most about the other one, about the partnership, about personal habits, interesting facts about the other one. I guess this is the reveal secrets about the other guy.
I think we know each other so well and work together so well that we've become housemates in the bus. We know what annoys each other and we don't do those things. And I think to be with someone so much every day, you would, if it wasn't compatible, then we'll kill each other. But we've never had a big disagreement about anything. I think we just know that life is full of fun, and we're so lucky to be able to be in this position and be able to play music and tour the world with each other.
Mm.
And there's nothing really to be that bogged down about that. And I think we just the mutual respect and the mutual love of music and being in a band together is what we love. Thank you,
Ben.
Like that was like a like play them off the stage moment right there. That's like the fade to black. And you know what? That's what we'll do.
The History of Alternative podcast is recorded at the 101 WKQX studios in Chicago. Subscribe on Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't do drugs. Stay in school.